The Friday Reporter launched in March of 2021 as a conversation with today's journalists and has expanded to include newsmakers, lawmakers, image makers, and just about anybody who's in the news or the news adjacent business. The podcast is in partnership with PR Daily and is part of the Big Wig Podcast Network. If you like the show, please hit the subscribe button to make sure you've got ready access to the latest conversation. And if you've got an idea for a great guest, don't forget to send your ideas to Lisa at FridayReporter.com. Well, hello, and thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Friday Reporter podcast. Today's guest is, I can't even wait to get into this conversation, but Torin Brin is the author of Fame Revolution, a brand new book. You've got to get a copy. It's talking to people like you and me, communicators, journalists, all of us who are just in the space about how we're living in this new era where we have to create a new strategy for ourselves. And she's got a great podcast. Anyway, we're going to get into all that. But Torin Brin, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you. I'm so honored.
Oh, well, I think the two of us are going to have a little bit of a conversation back and forth because I think we're living in this new space in our communication world. Talk to me a little bit about your background and how you got started in the communications field.
I got started in the communications industry by going into Congress, and you could choose two routes to go. You could either go the policy route or the PR route. You could be the communications person or policy. And someone said to me, you have much more of a versatile career if you go communication wise, because you're learning about a lot of topics. And that was really what fit me. So I worked then for Senator Hatch. And from there, I just became more and more into communications, and also helped out with a journalistic organization called the Media Project that was also called GEGRAPHA, which is really about how to provide a higher ethical standard in journalism. So I've been in the space since then, and then I've been then working on corporate and communications. I've been in even tapped a little bit into the music industry for a few months at Sony. So I've kind of seen communications in varied industries, and it's all the same. How do we get the message out in the right way, at the right time, at the right place?
Well, and even just in that short period of time that we've been doing this, the world has completely changed in terms of how we do communications and how we advance our messages, how we get stories to land. All of those things are so, so different. But tell me a little bit now, tell me about your podcast first. I want to hear a little bit more about Become Famous for What You Do.
Yeah. So, I think you'll appreciate this. We've always been behind the scenes, right? And so suddenly I have to be in front of the scenes. So I had to hire what I say, a me for me. So I got to hire a mini me to help me go out there. And that was hard. I can appreciate now my clients. And so when I did that, they were like saying, your brand is really that you help people become famous. And I was like, I can't use that. That sounds so ridiculous. But because it just sounded a little kitsch for me, right? But yeah, it really is, because I was investigating, what does fame really mean? And it means just to become known for what you do. We've given fame a bad word. And so we think of it as celebrity, but celebrity is a commoditized version of becoming known for who you are. And influencer is a commoditized version. But in the straight essence of the meaning of fame is to become known for what you do. And what that really means, it's not Kardashian. Kardashian is known for their beauty, and some things they're known for their businesses, but it's really becoming known for the gifts that's in your heart. And that's when I could really appreciate Become Famous. And what the podcast is really about is, how do we shine our gifts to the world? And all of us has a gift. We all have a fingerprint that's completely different. No one will ever go on this earth that's going to be 100% replica of us. And I think when we start really realizing the gift that we have, that's when we want to become famous. And become famous doesn't mean you can become famous in the celebrity sense that you have to be everywhere. What I like to say is, you want to have luxury fame. What is luxury fame? It is becoming famous in the circles that you want to be. So if you're a mother and you are in the PTA, you want to become the best mother, the best version of the person that's in the PTA. Or if you're a fireman, you want to be known in your community. It does not have to be at the highest level, but CEOs that are in an industry like oil and gas or environmental, they're going to want to be known for what their contribution is.
I love that so much. And in Washington, D.C., if I had a dollar for every time somebody said they want to be a thought leader is like exactly what you've just described, right? Like be famous for what you do, for who you are, for the space that you're in. Because when I was doing a little research and sort of diving into your background as we were getting ready for the show, I was having that reaction. Like famous feels almost shameful, right? To be
Yes.
famous is like a little bit like it's to be vain almost, right? And that's where you talk about celebrity. I get that. That makes a ton of sense. But to talk about famous in your own circles, famous in the world that you're living in, that totally tracks. And you see it everywhere now, right? It's everywhere. It's in our daily lives. So I love how you say even in the PTA, people that are known for being smart about college admissions or people that are known for being really good at fundraising, or that's really cool and a cool way to think about that for the listeners and for those of us who are trying to make our clients famous. But then, so on the podcast, tell me a little bit about the types of guests that you're hosting and what kinds of conversations you're having.
We have all kinds of guests. It's really been small businesses. So I've had like small businesses talking about how they got contribution to the community. Like I had this small mom and pop store, or not really mom and pop restaurant that's really high end in Kanab, and how they were servicing the community and became really known. And they were known in the community as being the pillar of society. And the way that they served people during COVID brought everyone together, right? So I have those kinds of and then I also have leading world experts like Fortune 100 companies or consulting of branding and marketing to the Fortune 100. So it's really the gamut because everyone needs to become famous. So it's kind of like I have the experts that are going on there, but I also have the people that need the help. And then I also have the soft spot for the environment. So I will plug certain issues that I really think should become famous.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, I'm going to make sure in the show notes for those people that are listening in that
Yes.
want to follow and hear more, that they'll know how to find your show, because that's, I
Yes.
think, important, especially amongst people like you and me who are working in these podcast projects. We want to make sure that our listeners are also crossing over to listen to other shows that we know we're
Yes.
following. So, but there is some negativity to that famous and that famous world. And I know you talk a little bit about that in the book. You talk about sort of the wide breadth of how we have to change and become the fame revolution, if you will, as you've put it. Tell me a little bit about that process and how you came together to decide to write on this.
Well, I came to write on it because I was a communications person in Washington, D.C. And when I moved to New York, for the first time, I experienced the silos between marketing and communication, and that you couldn't really have the full breadth that you have in politics or working on a campaign to understand that you're bringing something out. And I was asking myself, why is that? And I kind of didn't think so much about it, but then COVID happened. And I was suddenly seeing this shift when everyone's getting used to being on camera. Like I would have to pull people to be on camera, right? But now on Zoom, if you don't have the camera on, people are saying, could you please turn that camera on, right? We want to see the people. And so more and more people got used to it. At the same time, 86% of the world has a smartphone. Now, what does that really mean? It brings back to what Thomas Friedman said 20 years ago, that the world is flat. But it didn't really happen then. I mean, I remember reading the book and I didn't quite get it. Oh yeah, my clients are going to be from around the world. But now that's what happened, right? So this flatness of the world, the 86% really means we can each be our own media conglomerate. And that
Interesting.
sounds egomaniac, but it's really true. On the phone, I can do my business. I can walk, I can fax, I can email, I can text. I can do a podcast if I absolutely wanted to. Everything can be done on a smartphone. What does that mean? You're competing with the world.
Yes.
You're absolutely competing with the world. And when you're competing in the world, what does that really mean? And then everyone, like you and I would have all these like on a lineup of marketing people, lineup of PR people. How am I going to be different? The difference is you.
Yes.
You're
Yeah.
going to do it differently from me. We do the same thing, but you've got your podcast, I got my podcast, but we are going to appeal to people that are different. And the more you become yourself, this is going to even sound another egomaniac thing, but I think when we can embody the gifts that we have, we become the sun in our own solar system. And what do I mean by that? It's like, I don't really believe that you have to focus so much on the competitors But if you focus on your gifts shining completely out to who you are, people gravitate to you.
Yes.
And I think the more we can embody our gifts and share them, I think it's great. The negativity in all of this, when you're talking about, is that we have to view ourselves as a product. We are no longer just a person. And I, in the book, when I was in, interviewing Ingvild, who's a mother, and she was devastated. She goes, my daughter will never experience how it is to live completely free. And in the sense of, you have to curate. So like I have Sage, who works for me, and she's a Gen Z, and she completely automatically intuitively curates her persona online.
Yes.
I don't do that. I don't even think about that, right? and it's interesting to see how me as a digital immigrant versus someone that's native to it, that they just know it. So she didn't understand my book. So we had to go back and forth and dialogue on it. But for us that are not natives, we have to start viewing ourselves, and even the Gen Z, viewing it with a greater awareness that you're also the product. What does that mean? So when I have clients come in, because I work with authors and they want to become known, and I say, you got to think about yourself as also as a product. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Well, you can't market yourself. You need to have a team to market the product. You're not always going to have the best viewpoint of the product you, right? Yeah. And so it shifts things. It shifts the way departments are working. Like Grant Cardone talks about, you have to be omnipresent. You got to have a whole you got to have a whole team around you. And it's true. You need to start thinking about yourself as a product. That means you got to look at who's the team that's going to support the product of you, because you're not always going to see how you are. And that's like with journalists, even they have to think of themselves as products.
Absolutely.
And like we were talking about previously, right before we got on here, is how hard it is to get them. You have to go through these communications gatekeepers, which you never had to do before. I could just call a journalist, go for coffee, talk. They would go to my events. Now it's not like that anymore.
Yeah.
So I think, and then when you think about Ingvild being devastated for her daughter never to experience it, then I interviewed Loveleen, who's one of the world leading diversity leaders. And I was talking to her about it. And she goes, yes, but we didn't have the power.
Yeah.
We did not have the power we have today. And I think us as digital immigrants, we have such a hard time understanding we've got the power, right? And that's an exciting time. And yet it's a responsible ability that we have on ourselves. How are we managing the responsibility? And that's why we're getting all these people out there saying stupid stuff. And we as communications people are horrified. And then we go into our crisis mode and we want to help them, right? But I think that's why I say revolution.
Yes.
Because we're never going to be able to go back to what it used to be.
Absolutely agree.
And that's a grieving for us who knows how it was, what it was like. But at the same time, the opportunity of being a media conglomerate, the opportunity of being a sun, shining our gifts and actually making an influence on the world has never been as great as it is now.
What kinds of, thank you, because I think that you're absolutely right. I love the point that you make about us not worrying about the competition. I've had so many people say to me, I loved that you started this my show. Great friends have complimented the idea. And I said, you should do one too. And they said, but I would be competing with you. I said, but you have a totally different audience. Think about your network. Yeah. Your network is different than mine. And the value of these kinds of conversations is that they should be happening, right? So I have a little platform here and you've got a little platform there, and everybody should be doing what they can, except though that there have to be some guardrails, right? There have to be some things when you counsel your clients about creating that brand and being the brand. Are there things that you caution them against? Like, are there pitfalls and other things you've learned over time to make sure that folks are following along to do the right thing?
I think it's to live your brand. Right? It's really facing the good, the bad, the ugly, and the beautiful of you, right? And I think that's the one thing people don't do enough of. And this was where my crisis communication hat comes on, is it's not a matter of if you get canceled, it's a matter of when you get canceled.
Yeah.
And I think having the mental preparation of being canceled helps you understand when the critics are coming in and how you handle it, because people can't handle it. And I And there's so many great people that as soon as they get that first onslaught of criticism, they hide. But that's the greatest sign of your success. And if we could look at the critic as the success of our endeavor, we would handle it differently. And I think that's where people panic. They want to hide. And so we've got like this emotional scale in our book where we help people. Okay, in the emotional scale, where are you? In the beginning, you're going to be shocked. You're going to be shameful. You're going to want to hide. Then you're going to want to get angry. And then when you get angry, you're going to make that reaction instead of the response. And what we want to do is we want to be aware that this is normal. Doesn't mean you have to hide. It just means you got to feel it, let it go, and then think strategically. And this is why you are a product. You need to have people around you to manage it. You got to have advisors. You got to think strategically because the world is not what it used to be. You're not alone on this. And being a product, you're going to have a team. That's why I say this is the golden age for PR because we need champions, is what I call in the book. You need the paid champions. You need the non-paid champions. You need to create a buffer of a community around you that appreciates the sun that you are shining.
I love that because I was going to ask that too. In terms of, there are plenty of startups, small business owners, and friends of mine who maybe don't have the budget or the resources to hire someone in. And that's where you call on your friends and your counsel and the people that you trust in your world, right? So maybe it's not hiring someone right away to be sort of your sounding board, but put together a group of friends you trust who know you best, people that would want to listen to your show or would want to read your column or who would want to be part of your universe, right? And those are the kinds of people, for those people who don't have budgets, they should be counting on their friends and their family for that kind of counsel, wouldn't you think?
And it's like in politics, we have the word called the kitchen cabinet, which I thought was so fun. And it came from Jackson sitting around the kitchen cabinet wanting to have more of an informal discussion to get, hey guys, what do you really think about what I'm doing, right? And so, and I think, and even Obama, like Michelle Obama mentioned that in an interview with Oprah about that, my kitchen cabinet, right? It's those people that are not there to be paid, but they're there to support you, to love you. And you're going to want to make sure sometimes you can make it more formal where you make sure you have that critic in there. You have the devil's advocate that you can handle them critiquing you, right? My book would not be as great without Sage completely decimating it, right? And I gave her permission to do that. And if I hadn't done that, it wouldn't be as great. And I would let a lot of people, and people were nervous and said, no, I value your friendship enough that I take it seriously when you completely criticize what I do. But if I get that now, I'm safeguarding myself that I create a better product and something that people are really going to want.
And I love too that you say that having those critics come in, that really sort of resonated with me about living your brand, right? Being, and it's the way that I train when I train for corporate communication, public speaking, and otherwise is that authenticity, being your true self. And that resonates so much with me to be, if something bad happens, address it. If something great happens, address it. If something that you think maybe is a little bit, maybe you think is off brand, but if it's unique to you, share it. Share it in a way that you're comfortable too. Because that too, I think is absolutely the point that you're getting to, is that if you're living your brand and you're being authentic with your audience, even if critics come in, people are going to naturally rally around you because they know, intuitively who you are. And I love that.
And I think I'd love to add this though, but because you're the product, you are expected to be on camera. You're expected to do reels. And I think sometimes I like Emily Hunt. She wrote this book called The Influencer Industry about how being authentic doesn't mean that you're truthful, right? And I think if you look in the court of opinion or in big courts, sometimes the guilty one looks more innocent than the innocent one, right? Because the innocent one is being nervous and is moving and speaking in fear. And when you're speaking in fear, you're persona, your brand is being interpreted wrong. And in that field, you need to practice your authenticity. And that's why we have a program called the 21-Day Practice Authenticity, where you can come in and we get these little fun games. And because you're going to want to practice being authentic. And the best way we have found is actually on live Facebook Lives. I was being trained by Michelle Soro, who's absolutely fantastic on, and she's from, was on Extra as one of their presenters. And she was saying, it usually takes 2 years to be yourself on camera. But what they found is that if you do a phone, a live, and you train, and she does like 30, I did 60 days with her. I found that when I train politicians and business leaders, 21 days is a really good day. But having these fun games, going on live video, you will be able to tap into the magic of you in a different way. And you become more professional on presenting the authentic you.
Boy, that's so, I mean, that totally tracks with my experience too. So first year on the podcast, little shaky, little uncomfortable, didn't do it on video. Second year on the podcast, I actually started doing a lot more TV because there was a lot of sort of like, would you zoom in and talk about this issue or that issue? And now I find myself weekly doing television, and it feels so much more authentic. Because over the course of that time, I've gotten more comfortable with seeing myself, listening to my own voice, all of that too. I love that so much. I think that that's absolutely, I mean, 21 days is kind of a magic moment, but 2 years of just sort of practice and making yourself sort of comfortable with all of those things really is something that I think, even you see it in journalism, right? You see these,
Yeah.
the new people that come on the scene, right? You see them all the time and they look a little clunky, like baby calves sort of figuring out how to walk. And within a short period of time, they're like, they're fantastic. And it's all about just having that experience. So that's such good counsel too. Tell me, what other kinds of things are you following trend-wise? You're obviously seeing around the curve and sort of advising clients. What other kinds of things are you watching in your practice and seeing that are that's working in our field?
That's working in our field. I'm not quite sure what is working. I think the working are the people that really understand intuitively, like Berlin Rosen, which is a fantastic PR company, Purple. There's one in Norway called First House and Partei, which is a one that's going international right now, buying up various public relations companies. Is using the philosophy that I write out in the book is what Washington, D.C. and Hollywood have done for ages, is creating understanding that you're a product and a person. And I think that's really a trend that I'm writing about, but the for the last 15 years, the companies that are really growing exponentially in the marketing and communications field, both are the companies that are taking on the way you do it in politics and in Hollywood.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's so interesting, and we've seen it in the corporate space, right? With those who are trying to be a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and aren't really sort of embracing that sort of uniqueness of the product and the client, like the folks that have gotten hit for maybe taking a stance on a particular issue or stepping out in a lane that doesn't necessarily make sense. If they come back to your counsel and they realize that the product is a person, and they start to market it as if it's a as if it is one expected sort of personality, if you will, that
Right.
alone seems like it would be probably very good counsel for those companies that are trying to figure out who they are and what they want to be.
Well, a company needs to be a product, right? So they need to be a person, right? So what happens is a person needs to think they're going to be, it's like the yin and the yang, right? It's really what the revolution has done. The yin and the yang is really everything is a person and a product. The company and the CEOs, right? And so having come from Washington, I've always utilized, and then when I was dipping my toes into the music industry, I saw that it's the same thing. The success is the yin and the yang, and that's where thought leadership comes in. It's just a product. You're making a thought leader into a product that you can sell and showcase to people. We are entertaining, we're fun, we're informative by our product, right?
Yes.
A company needs to be human centric, which is what Jim Stengel talks about, a fantastic book called Grow, which came out almost 20 years ago. And he was one of the first people at Procter & Gamble, and he was had an exponential success. And all he did was looking at the product as a person. So he took like Pampers. Let's go back to the origin of Pampers. Max Factor. Let's go back to the origins of Max Factor and finding these little personality traits. And then taking those personality traits, amplifying it into the product, creating this human experience, and people can't help go to that, right? And that's like with Apple. It's the companies that really succeed is understanding that they are human the people that are really successful understand they are intuitively a product.
I love that. Totally. It totally makes sense. It's crystal clear to me. And it's the kind of thing that I think more people are trying to wrap their brain around, figure out how to do. I love that you call us digital immigrants, those of us who are of a certain age, and the kids. I mean, when I ask for help with TikTok, I typically go to the teenagers that live in my house
because
they
them.
Know better than me. But I'm going to use that over and over. I'm totally stealing the digital immigrant.
Oh, please steal it.
Because that's how you I are. Feel. That's how I feel. I feel like I'm sort of new to this. But I also love, too, that you've engaged the folks on your team, Sage, and people that are helping you kind of figure this out. Because I think that that's probably also good counsel, that we, as at a certain point in our career, also have to recognize that even though we love to complain and mutter under our breath about the generation behind us, the cool thing I think about COVID and all of this revolution, as you refer to it, is that we are going to have to count on the folks that are right behind us and maybe two generations behind us to figure out how to stay relevant and how to counsel well in this space, which is a new thing, I think, in the communication space. Typically, it's the old hat, the listen to me, kid, I'll tell you how it's done. It's really not that way anymore.
No, but my I would have to say my secret ingredients for my success in my last 20 years of career, I've always had interns and young people teach me. So I always have, like, I've either formalized it or I've had it done informal, but I have like a trainee program. So I sit the interns down, like even when I was young, I said, you're going to need to teach me because I am, even though I'm only five years older than you, I am not where you are at. Yeah. And they would be so perplexed because teaching an older person, like, oh, wow. And so, and I've brought that with me in every single job I've had. And so, like, when Twitter came along, I had no idea how to do Twitter, but yeah. I had two kids. I call them kids, but they were students. And
they're
their
younger
20s,
than us. I get it.
They're younger than us. I call everyone kids that are younger than me.
So do I.
And they would sit me down once a week and they would teach me. And so, and then I would teach them. And I thought, that dynamic of being humble enough when you're older to listen to them, you get so much more out of them. And I think that's one of the reasons why Sage wanted to stay on after the trainee program, because I'm listening to her and she sees that, like in the book, I actually have a chapter where she's writing about Taylor Swift, how Taylor Swift has really embodied the product and the person. Mm. And it makes it more fun.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'd recommend any communications person out there, get someone young as soon as possible and give them the opportunity to teach you, because that gives them confidence, but it also gives you a leg up in the industry.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And the other thing too is, I think it's the kind of thing that I always joke about it as building your empire. Right? Because it's not just about having your young people. It's not just about having your senior mentors that help you. It's like having your, as we go back to it, our audience, right? Our people, our influencers, people that are going to help us sort of be successful in our space. So, all right. So the book is, we're going to make sure that everybody's got that going. There's one more question I had for you. You wrote a piece not that long ago that really was, I thought was kind of great. And it's a little bit morbid, but I think it's kind of great. And it's about writing your eulogy to change your life. I love that piece. I loved it. I thought it was like, so tell me a little bit about sort of your thought process there.
Well, so I think what's hard, because we help clients become famous for what they do. So we get like individuals that want to, like they say they want to become on Oprah and Tony Robbins. Well, you have to embody that, right? But then what happens a lot of times, they don't know what they're going to be famous for. So they have this whole list of things they want to do. And we have all these priorities. And I got the idea from Donald Miller. He writes quite a bit about and talks about writing your eulogy. And so I totally agree with him. And I think it's so important, because when my colleague, Zachary, was the one that forced me to do it, I had it in our little tricks of trades to help, but I didn't do it myself. And he goes, well, you need to do it. And I go, okay, I'll do it. And it just zoomed in exactly what I wanted to do, because you can't do everything.
Yeah.
You have maybe 1,000 Saturdays until you pass away. You maybe even only 500, 100, right? And a friend of mine that was really dear to me, my best friend, passed away 4 years ago. She doesn't have those Saturdays, right?
Yeah.
And so maximizing, but staying focused. And I think that's why when people think about the why, the purpose, really what it all comes down to, what is the main gift that you have that you love to do, that you want to contribute to the world with? And when you write the eulogy, what's so interesting is that when you think about the pastor or the priest talking about it, and this is what I love so much about Norwegian tradition, because I come from Norway. And in Norway, what they'll do is they'll have this pastor sit with the family and interview everyone about the person that passed. And then, like a journalist, he will go there and he will read, the person was born on such and such day. This was life decision number one, number two, number three. And then what is the legacy? And I didn't think I'd love funerals, but it's such a beautiful way of saying goodbye to someone and yet to know their whole life. So like my aunt, there was these little things I didn't even know about, but getting her whole life story in that way, it was like, wow. And so then when if you sit down and you write your life story, you know the high points that you really want to keep investing. So when you have a life decision where your gift is here, and a nice to have thing is here, you're gonna choose your gift,
Yes.
and you're gonna
Yes.
become a better person. You're gonna create a stronger legacy for the next generation.
I love it. I as soon as I read it, I said this is a really good exercise for anybody who wanted to
It
be,
is.
thinking about what their legacy is long before we have to make that decision, right? I think
Right.
that's such good counsel. Well, we could go on toward forever. I mean, we have to do this again. So the
Yeah, you also
invitation
come on my podcast.
I would love
That's a
that. The
must. That's a
invitation is
must.
always open to you. But I warned you ahead of time. I'm going to ask you because I always ask for a recommendation. Who do you think I should have as a guest?
Who do I think you should have a guest? There's so many people. I think a guest that I would actually, it's a little bit off, but it might not work, is his name is Ian Peterman. He has a successful podcast, and he really is mirroring the revolution of fame into the space of the environment. And what's interesting about that is what you're seeing is the revolution is everywhere. And what he is doing is he's meeting with thought leaders and designers on how do we actually live this life
I love
right
that.
now.
I love that. Well,
And he's fantastic
there
about
are
that. And
no.
he's part of this book here. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, I don't have it here. Oh, here it is. Sorry. This book here, Let's Get Practical.
I love it.
And it's really about how do we live a practical life in this crazy world.
Yeah, cool. There are no wrong guests. There are no wrong answers on this show. That's what I did. I built a show where we can't be wrong. So
I love
I'm
that.
gonna put Ian on my list. Torin, this was such a treat. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. This is wonderful.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Friday Reporter podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I love having this show. I love you to be part of it. Thanks again. Thanks to PR Daily for being a partner, and thanks to the folks at Big Wig Podcast for letting us be part of their network. See you soon.